Oh, ho, ho, chinwaggers. Oh, my goodness. We have some exciting news. We are coming to Boston.
Beantown, baby.
That's right, Beantown.
Yes, we will be chinwagging live before you at Center for the Arts at the Armory in Somerville, Mass. On Friday, April 19th.
These live shows are awe-inspiring. We love seeing our fans and taking your bizarre questions.
There's also going to be a special meet and greet with us, just for VIPs, of course, and we can chat a bit. We'll sign a poster. It's going to be awesome.
Tickets are available right now at chinwagpod.fm/Boston. That's chinwagpod.fm/Boston. So get your tickets. This will be an historic event, the likes of which Boston has never seen. And Boston has seen a lot of history. You might even catch me in the wild playing my theremin and Steven playing his guitar for real.
You do not want to miss this.
So meet us in Boston, Chinwaggers, April 19th at the Armory. We can promise you one thing. It's going to get weird. Oh, it always does. And until then, wag on.
Wag on.
It's my 20-year anniversary of winning the state championship back in high school when I was a senior. Tom Brady won a championship 20 years ago. He's still playing. I've played high school. I've played college. I have retired from the league, and I have made the Hall of Fame, and he's still playing. You know what I mean? It's just some people just have that thing, and he, you know, his drive is to be a great teammate, to be a great quarterback, to have his business, to, you know, be the head of his family. And if his family is good with it, then, you know, that's a great thing.
Take a hint, Tom Brady. Come on. For God's sakes, people are living multiple lives in this time span.
Okay. So, Jordan, listen, I know that people are going to think this is like yesterday's news, but to me, it's not yesterday's news. And that's St. Peter's. And their incredible run in this tournament. I mean, everybody in the world was rooting for them. They're small. I think they might have like 3,000 students. Wasn't that, I mean, talk about a Cinderella story. Bill Murray should do this. That's a Cinderella story. So, I mean, did you get excited about it? Did you watch any of the tournament?
Not excited at all. I'm mostly dead inside. I am somebody who's loyal to the Michigan Wolverines. So while you guys have your dalliances with these Cinderella teams, congratulations. They all end in heartbreak. Spoiler alert. It's all fun and games until only one team goes home happy. So,
you know, now that I think about it, maybe there should be a slap off between Will Smith and the coach of the University of Michigan basketball team. What do you think of that?
Don't even start there. Juwan Howard, that storyline has shifted. Did you see him cradling? He cradled the athlete who lost. That's the new narrative, Governor. Get on board.
I'm glad he's changed. I am glad he's changed. And he must have heard the podcast where we were on him. He must have heard that, and he must have said, I need to change. And God bless him.
Let it be known that I stood by him all the way through. That's always been Juwan Howard. So you try to dismirch him because he mildly pushed an assistant coach once.
Yeah. Let me tell you, he mildly pushed you, and you know, being a swing dancer and everything, you could probably take it, as you know. But Jordan, how are your Nets doing, by the way? I mean, have you and your wife been to another game? Those seats are like $800 a piece.
Yeah.
Of course, you did say you were rich, so I guess you can afford those seats,
I'm very rich, so I can get down front wherever I need to. Not a thing. We haven't been in a little while, but we're excited. I mean, it's playoffs time. I think the team is getting healthy. Fingers crossed stays healthy and can make a good run. I don't know.
And Kyrie,
there's so much fun to
watch.
Kyrie,
they changed all of the rules in New York City for a basketball player. Now, if they'd have changed it for you, I could understand. But they changed it for him, Kyrie.
You know, it's good drama. New York likes good drama. And so, yeah, the rules, suddenly Kyrie can finally play at home. What a complicated situation. I I like how stringent New York has been.
If you don't get vaccinated, you can't play unless you're a fan of the Nets, and then they'll change the rules.
Mayor
caved already. The mayor's been in office for like a couple months, and he's already sold out. Although I do like him.
I know this is my bias. I want stringent rules when it comes to vaccination, but when it comes to my team winning, I throw it all out the door. That's the number one thing. So thank you, Kyrie. Welcome back. Please bring some joy to Brooklyn.
And you know, the other thing is, Jordan, what's cool is we have all the super teams today, you know, which I can't figure out who's on first. I mean, you can't go to a – now the people that can make money are those that sell programs because nobody knows from week to week who's on what team.
People know. But, you just don't know. You're not an example of people.
How about this guy we're having today? He was – the beginning of the super team. It's real. I'm so excited to have him on here today. Go ahead, Jordan.
We are super excited, super lucky. Our guest today, NBA Hall of Famer, 11-time All-Star, 2-time NBA champion, Olympic gold medalist, and the league's global ambassador. His memoir, Letters to a Young Athlete, is available now. It offers a proven path for taming your inner voice and making it your ally through the challenges of failure and success alike. We have Chris Bosch on the show. Thank you, Chris.
Hey, good to be here. You guys are funny.
I'm sorry you have to hear our basketball analysis to start off. It's weak. It's weak, and I apologize.
No, it's good. It's you know, points of view, man.
Don't bring that weak stuff in here, is what he would say.
That's pretty much what he's saying.
Chris, I want to kick this off. You have a memoir out right now, and in that memoir, you invite and encourage your audience to find their why. So I want to know, I want to turn it right back on you. Why write a memoir? And also, what is your why?
You know, it's so interesting. That word memoir, you know, so many people, have used it, and I guess it kind of is sort of, I never thought about it that way. I just, kind of went along with the process and was more so trying to figure out what I wanted to say, what I felt was important. And, you know, book writing is hard. I knew that coming into the process, but people were asking me to, like, yo, you should write a book. And I didn't know what the hell I was going to write about. You know what I mean? And it was like a 2-year process. And, you know, I found myself just reflecting on what got me to that particular point at that particular time. And that's the reason for the title of the book, Letters to a Young Athlete, because, you know, the books that I felt that helped me most were books that were on business and based off of, you know, mental preparation and things like that. So although it does say young athlete, it's really for everybody. It's a universal message. And, you know, finding your why, so many times playing basketball, rising through the ranks, and I'm sure in media, politics, anything you're going for, I've been a witness to people, and I felt it myself, where you'll think you want to do something because you think the money is going to satisfy you, or the notoriety, or the championship, and those things aren't going to do it, you know? So I want to challenge people to think deeper about why they're doing something, because if you're really going after something, if you really want to be a champion, you're going to have to be waking up early, going to sleep late, doing things that you don't necessarily want to do, pushing your body and your mind beyond limits, you know, playing psychological mind games with your opponent. You know, you're going to be doing those things necessary to win. So when it gets hard, you're going to have to really, really rely on that why. And at that time of me playing basketball, I played the game because I love playing the game. It just completed me. I mean, just even going, you know, when you go into a gym and you get that smell, I love that smell. You know, it reminds me of childhood. It reminds me of, you know, just coming up and trying to be something. So, you know, I always just wanted to, you know, be the best in something, push myself to be the best and try to accomplish things in a team sport. And, you know, playing team sports too, that's a great thing. You know, camaraderie, friendship, learning life lessons with, you know, elder coaches and things like that. It was just all those things incorporated, you know, helped me at that time of playing basketball. Now I'm in a different place.
Chris, there's so many things. I mean, I could talk to you for a couple hours here. There's so many questions I want to ask you about, you know, adrenaline and being interrupted in the height of your career and all that. But before we go there, there's a young man that I try to coach, at distance. He's 12 years old. His name is Jackson Rohrer, okay? And he just started to play basketball. And I said, Jackson, the most important thing in basketball is to learn how to dribble. People think it's all about shooting. It ain't about shooting. First, you learn how to dribble. Then you learn how to pass. And then when you're really good at that, then you learn how to shoot. Am I wrong?
I mean, no. It's so many different ways, right? It's more than one way to skin a cat, right? And, you know, I guess for me, you know, for me, I grew up playing on the playground and fundamentals. I didn't really learn the fundamentals until probably about the 9th grade, going into the 10th grade. So I was a pretty raw basketball player in the beginning. But, you know, one thing that I found, everybody has their own mix in their own way. And we all have our own paths to get to our goal, right? That is a point. I can't say it's not right. It's not wrong. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, because if you just take the ball, I know I'm pretty sure you've seen a little league game.
You're breaking down my lesson to him, and he's going to want to hear this. And you're going to be saying, don't pay attention to Kasich. Just do what you want to do. He's not 6'11", however. He's just a little guy, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, taking it pieces. I love breaking things down into pieces. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you'll learn how to dribble and pass, and those are important things. You don't want to be the guy running with the ball as soon as you get it, and then you can't play at all. But, you know, it's always so many different ways to get there. But, again, I will back you up, though. You got to listen to Coach, you know? You're the coach. You know, I'm not the coach.
I'd like to disagree here. For all of the children listening to this podcast, and there's literally three of them out there, I want them to take all basketball advice from you and not Coach Kasich. That's, from here on forward, you're the expert. I'm curious. Actually, what you just said, Chris, you talk a lot and you think a lot about basketball and finding meaning, finding your why, but also finding joy. There's something very zen about sometimes the way you talk about basketball, finding the joy in those moments because it can be full of so much heartache. That feels almost antithetical to the way a lot of kids are asked to view basketball. It's so goal-oriented. You're there to win a championship, and you're prided on whether you win, and your successes are on you getting up even when you lose to, we're going to win next season, you start working again. And that's so single-minded, and it almost seems like it has to be for a world-class athlete like yourself to be that single-minded and so goal-oriented. Sure. And yet, it feels like the happiness works on a totally different scale, where that single-mindedness gets in the way of finding joy and happiness because you can't control everything. Do you have to? Have you had to live with that contradiction? Am I oversimplifying it?
No, absolutely. It is kind of such a contradiction. You do have to be single-minded. But one of the things that I found, and these were things that I practiced while I was playing, one of the things that I found is having that mindset, having more of an open flowing mindset, taking the things as they come. That was like the holy grail for me because I didn't want to think anymore. You know, you spend your time thinking, you'll mess up. You just have to go out there. You play the game. You read and react and you live with the results because you train every day and we had trained all our lives. But at the same time, yeah, you're singularly focused on one goal. One of the things that it helped me do was really stay in the moment. You know, as crazy as it sounds, like, you know, the whole NBA season being a collection of plays, you know, just try your best to stay present and focus on each play because it's going to require your attention. And really for me, what helped me was, yes, I did want it to win. When I'm on the court, I'm single-minded. You have to have that mentality, that killer instinct. I do want to win championships. You know, I do want to have team success. I think now it's kind of getting confused a little bit, the glorification, which has probably already always been like this. But if you score a bunch of points on a losing team, it's okay, as opposed to being a part of a great team. I think, you know, kids want to aspire to be, well, as long as I get my points, it's all good. I wanted to kind of one thing I learned about being in Miami was how important a team was, and putting yourself inside that team, having that singular mindset for the championship. But it's a brotherhood. It's a team. You know, if I'm doing something detrimental to the team, then we're not going to reach our goal. If we're not holding each other accountable as a team, we're not going to be able to go any forward, much forward. So, like for me, I had the accolades, the individual accolades early in my career, but I found myself not very happy and empty. I wanted to be great. I wanted to be a champion. That's something that I always wanted to do. But in that, I found that you have to have a strong team, and it's really about the ride. Because although I do have championships and it's great, most people don't win it. Like you were joking earlier, he's like, yeah, spoiler alert. It mostly ends in heartbreak. And, but just to the gentleman from St. Peter's, think about the ride they had. You know what I mean? And think about somebody that might be on that team if they weren't enjoying it because he's pissed off because the coach wasn't playing him and he wasn't taking in every moment, you know?
They were a team.
Those are moments fleeting by. So, you want to be a part of a team.
Yeah. Chris, listen, there's so much to cover here. Coming out of draft class with Dwayne Wade, Carmelo, LeBron. I mean, it's just unbelievable that class. But I want to get to that. I hope Jordan does too. But what I'm particularly interested is here you are. Boy, and I can remember you hitting that left-hander from the corner and winning that championship and two titles and just in Miami of all places. It's just, like you're on fire. But then one day, in the middle of all this, in one day, you get a blood clot and you get several. And all of a sudden, it's over.
Yeah.
Really hard, wasn't it?
It was extremely hard. And this was one of the reasons that I wanted to write the book and kind of tell people about those concepts of like, yeah, be singular minded, but enjoy what you're doing because it'll really one day be over. For me, I was in the middle of trying to redefine myself, reinvent my game. I felt that we had a team good enough to compete for a championship. Dwayne had something to prove. We had a very strong team. So after we have our run, Bron goes back to Cleveland. He's got a good team. We've got a good team. You know, I was like, man, it'd be great to duke it out with my brother, you know, but it just, you know, that just didn't happen. And it helped me realize how fleeting life in this game is. You know, I mean, just, you know, kind of alluding to the NCAA tournament, I empathize with a lot of those athletes because it's like, wow, what am I going to do? You know what I mean? What am I going to do? What am I going to do moving forward? What's wrong with me? But I can't play the game anymore, you know, and that's just a fact now. So moving on from that, I understood then that, you know, it all is over one day. And so then that made me kind of put me in a different mind frame. I become more of a family man. I was before, but I'm, you know, being in the house and not so much on the road, concentrating on being a father.
But you were angry too and depressed, and people need to hear this because it's not just a game of basketball is all over. The game is over in life at times, right? You get to it and it's done. So how did you work your way through it, and how long, you know, how'd you win that battle?
Well, yeah, a lot of people don't know. So it happened twice. Once was really bad. I collapsed lung. I had tubes in my chest, nearly lost my life. And then I worked back from that, got back to championship form and all-star form in less than a year. And then I had another one, you know. And so just having it snatched away, it feels unfair. It, you know, you have your pity party and you go through some depression and woe is me and why is this happening and all this stuff. But eventually I just kept my mind open. I kept finding things to do throughout my day. I'm blessed to have children. I have five children. So, you know, I got right to the carpool line. You know, we're packing lunches, we're doing activities and things like that. I just had to find a way, you know, to get back on my feet. And I remember one of the things that kind of snapped me out of it was two instances. One was talking to somebody and they ended up, you know, telling me like, yo, it never ends the way you want it to. And I couldn't say anything to that. And then I had another friend who told me, like, yeah, you know, I was a kid with cancer, so it really is on you to be happy. And having these conversations, I said, okay, I can sit here and stay in this place, or I can be ambitious and find that thing, find a reason to get up in the morning, right? That's that self-motivation that you have to have, or that you have to build. But, you know, I had to eventually, I got tired of being tired, you know? I wanted to get up and do something about it.
I imagine not only moving on from a career is so life-changing and emotional and full of grief, but how does that compare to what it's like to also to not only go from, you go from Toronto to Miami, but you're also leaving teammates, community, what you've built? Like, what is the feeling of leaving a team like that? And does that compare to what it feels like for retirement as well?
It was tough, you know, and you know, I knew that the people of Toronto, the fans, my friends would understand, but I knew that the overall perception wouldn't be so happy. And what made it especially tough, I had broke my nose. I didn't play the last game because my last game as a Raptor, I broke my nose in my eye socket. And so I went in surgery. I was out for like a week, and it was only a week left in the season, like 5 days left in the season. So I got my, you know, they pack your nose. And so I went to the doctor, got it taken out, and then went to the game. And it was my last game, like going there as a member of the team. And they had signs. Everybody had signs and was like, stay. We want you to stay. We want more. And I'm just like, golly, I haven't even gone through the process. I haven't even really put myself in that position to think about it. You know what I mean? Because I knew it was going to be a tough decision. I didn't know what to do. But, you know, eventually I came to the decision and, you know, I had to be real with myself and my goals and what I wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve as a basketball player and as a teammate. So, you know, I made the decision. And even though it was tough, we always say, you always hear it, it's a part of the business. But it didn't make it easy. It didn't make it easy to, you know, pretty much leave. I have an apartment and I have a house, a nice condo that I like, and it has a beautiful view of the city. And
don't run out of gas in Toronto. They're not going to help you, Chris, just so you know. I can promise you. Hey, Chris, you know, being on that court, you know, I talked to a coach, a couple great athletes. They run out of the tunnel, just like, you know, Jordan, you know, the big house. I've never been there. I'm going to go. My only game I'm going to go to, I'm going to go with Jordan. He invites me. I'm not sure he will, but I want to go.
I'll take you to the big house.
Look, you come.
I can't get you on the field, though, to be clear.
That's okay. You come through the tunnel. No, we don't want to get on the field anyway. People will be throwing stuff at us. But here's the thing. You go through the tunnel, and it's adrenaline like you've never known. And so that's one thing that you had to adjust to, I'm sure. I mean, hitting those threes and, I mean, just amazing. And then I look at Tom Brady. Now, Tom Brady said he was, you know, he was going to quit and he was going to spend time with his family. It reminds me of John Madden. When John Madden told his family he was going to quit, spend more time with them, and then after 3 weeks they say, could you go back to your job? I mean, is that what you think somebody like Brady misses, is the notion that adrenaline is just not there? And I think that's big stuff for rock stars. It's probably big for athletes as well, huh?
For sure. I would say that, you know, I was reading Brady's quotes. I could read the gray athlete quotes, and I'm like, he never really said he was going to stop. Everybody was like, well, but he's retired. I said, man, I don't think he ever said. And I didn't think he was going to come back, but then he comes back. I think in his instance, he's perfected the football life. You know, he's at an age where he can make things happen. He's arguably the best quarterback in the league last year. He arguably could have won an MVP trophy last year. So essentially, he's on top of his game. He's as better as he's ever been, you know, throwing the ball. I think it's a circular picture, right? It's all in there. Yeah, you can't. And I know this from experience now, like everybody asks me, do you miss it? I say, yeah, of course I miss it, but you can't feel that. I'm not looking to feel that thing. But he knows, I'm sure, as long as he can do it, as long as he can feel that feeling, as long as he can go down there on that field, I mean, yeah, play in front of 80,000, 60,000, 70,000 people, you know, that shouldn't, you know, that doesn't happen. And I'm sure he's, I mean, hell, probably all of his friends have been retired, you know, I have a joke, like, well, not even a joke. When I, 20 years ago, it's my 20-year anniversary of winning the state championship back in high school when I was a senior. Tom Brady won a championship 20 years ago. He's still playing. I've played high school. I've played college. I have retired from the league, and I have made the Hall of Fame, and he's still playing. You know what I mean? It's just some people, you know, some people just have that thing, and he, you know, his drive is to be a great teammate, to be a great quarterback, to have his business, to, you know, be the head of his family. And if his family is good with it, then, you know, that's a great thing.
Take a hint, Tom Brady. Come on. For God's sakes, people are living multiple lives in this time span.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I mean, you know, and just, I mean, just, you said take a hit. That's like, man, if he gets hit, man, I couldn't imagine. Like, I remember being an athlete at 30, and I was like, I don't know, man. This shit is crazy on my body. You know, at 44 years old or 40, I don't even know how old he is. It's like, he's just defying the odds, and I guess he's trying to cement, build his own Tom Brady Island. It'll be the NFL, and then it'll be Tom Brady over there, man. It's incredible.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show. Something I heard about you is talking about dealing with the ups and downs and the stresses of NBA life. You oftentimes turn to your relationship and your, with your wife as far as a sounding board to get you through some of those things, which is not a story you often hear about professional athletes and the relationships they have working with their partner like that. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, you know, wives don't get enough credit. The people behind you, the people off the court don't get enough credit. It was so great to see. Of course, you know, we had a group of great wives. We had a great teammate, Heidi Battier, Savannah James, Gabrielle Union, my wife. You know, it was just Faith Haslam, Udonis Haslam's wife. You know, they have to be a team as well. Because, you know, we're always not in the best mood. As an athlete, we're either tired or grumpy or both, you know, and they play such a huge role in holding down the household, taking care of the kids, making sure it smells good. And maybe you have some food when you come home. That'd be, you know, kind of cool. But at the same time, doing their things and living their lives. And it was, you know, it was inspirational to watch. But more importantly, like, yeah, I mean, you know, when I come off from the court and stuff like that, I have things to get off my chest. I'm trying to figure things out. I still have my best friends who, you know, guy friends. I still have my teammates. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, she was so invested in me and she pushed me to be great and get to where I want to go. And I never took that lightly. So and my wife is super smart. She's way smarter than me, you know, so. I was always looking for pointers, looking for things. And she gave such a fresh perspective of things. You know, women give such a different perspective. You know, dudes will be all like, oh, we got to play harder, you know, and the wife will say something well, and it makes sense and it works, you know. So I found
maybe
myself.
She said you should have worked on your dribbling when you were younger. You know, it's possible.
Leave it, Governor. This is
said you should have listened to Coach Kasich. All right, that's all I got.
You know, Chris, you were saying, Jordan. You know, it was really interesting because Chris was saying that when he left, and even now, I guess if you're not in the game, you're kind of not in the game. Same thing with politics. You know, because I kind of feel if you're not in the game, you're kind of not in the game.
It's a mo to that. You're not locked in every day. Like the, you know, the train leaves right. The station, you know, eventually. But yeah, I was in Miami last week. I talked to Pat Riley all the time, talked to Coach Spo all the time. I talked to LeBron. You know, we text every now and then, Dwayne. You know, when you form a brotherhood like that, you keep in touch, you know.
Right.
I just, you know, Shane, had dinner with Shane. And, you know, we all still hang out. We make it a point to, you know, still keep in touch and talk to each other and, you know, make sure everybody is doing okay. Cause everybody has families. LeBron is still playing and Carmelo's still playing too. But like, we're all looking for, you know, that next thing to that drives us to be successful at.
Yeah, Pat, I'm watching the new Lakers series on HBO. Pat Riley is Adrian Brody. Is that good casting?
Hold on, I'm going to pull up a picture right quick. I haven't started the series yet. I got to see what he looks like.
You got to binge it. It's pretty great.
A quick fun story. I actually read for Kareem's part.
Really?
A couple years ago. It was right before the pandemic. And I feel so connected to that movie. And I'm like, oh, I wanted it so bad.
That's it.
If he puts on an Armani suit with the slick back, it can work.
He can pull it off. He's got slick.
Casting. That's good casting, man.
What's it? That's a funny thing to hear. What's it like to read for Kareem, both to put your foot into the acting world, but secondarily then to play an iconic? Also, you're both Hall of Famers.
Yeah, that's crazy to say, right? That's crazy to say. Kareem is awesome. You know, he's an author. We actually had lunch before a few years back. And this is even before me writing a book. This dude has wrote like 8 or 9 or 10 books. Like, crazy. He's legit scholar. you know what I mean?
And also Sherlock Holmes fiction as well, right? He writes a lot of books Sherlock. Yeah, he's unbelievably prolific. And one of the things he's into, I believe, is Sherlock Holmes fan fiction. And he has many published, well-regarded Sherlock Holmes tales. Fascinating guy.
Fascinating dude. And it just came about and I figure I'd try for it. And I just kept reading for it, but I just, it would have been super cool to be in that space. I mean, we're kind of getting to the point now where all the stories are kind of starting to be told, the basketball stories. And, that was such a tremendous time. I mean, they owned the 80s, no offense to Celtics fans, but they owned the 80s. They had to look like my dad was a huge Pat Riley fan. I mean, when you say Showtime, you know what that is. When you think of Pat Riley, like they were, leaders in the game. You know what I mean? Mr. Dr. Buss and Jack Nicholson, and then Pat Riley with his Armani suits with the slick back hair, and you got Magic. I mean, it was an incredible atmosphere, but like such a genesis to like a new, fresh way to take in the game and live the game,
Speaking of that, so I was watching TNT the other night, and I don't know if you've seen this, Jordan, but Shaq was explaining to Kenny Smith how you don't have to spend $80 to fill up your gas tank. When the gas tank gets down halfway, you put $20 in, and then it'll take it back up again, and you don't have to put the money in to let it go all the way down. And there's Barkley, and I swear, the whole thing was so funny, and Barkley was just roaring, and the host, Ernie, he kept saying, what's closer, the moon or the sun? It was hilarious. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's going to live for a long time. But what about that TNT magic there, Chris? And could you do something like that? I mean, if you take Shaq and Kenny and Barkley, there's just, it's almost like PTI, where those two guys have just connected with something. They got chemistry, they say, Jordan. They got chemistry. What, do you ever watch that? Do you like that show? Do you like those guys particularly? Well, everybody wants to know about Charles, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been a guest on TNT a few times. Turner is always great to work with. They do have magic there. They figured out some kind of thing. And on top of that, they've done thousands of shows, so building in the community. Even when Shaq came in, he was like an added piece. And as opposed to trying to start it all over again, he joins the cast, So, I mean, they've been working since the 90s and just refining it. And they found like this magic space to where it can just go. And it's great because it's not even half the time about basketball. You know what I mean? It's like a break from the game. It's like, oh, yeah, we're watching basketball. But you still kind of get that conversational stuff that you want to. Like you're talking to your friends or listening to your friends and laughing and joking, sometimes being serious.
Do players get annoyed by their criticism? Do they see them as like the old guard critiquing the young guard playing? Is there a love between the players and the ex-players who are critiquing what's happening on the court?
Yeah, there's a love, but there's an annoyance too. If you're a player, That's why I mostly stay out of it. You know, for sure. I mean, you know, we've all been young players or young people, right? And, you know, if an older person is telling you what to do, it's like, hey, shut up. You know, you always, that is, for as long as human existence is going, I think that'll always be a thing, you know. But, yeah, I mean, they offer their opinions in it. You know, some are good. Some people don't care for. You know, it's really on the players to listen or not listen. They have a show to do. I know for me as a player, I never really got much into it. If somebody said something, you know, you'll still have to tell me good job eventually, you know, so I don't necessarily have to respond to the criticism, but you have to respond to my success. You know what I'm saying? So I always kind of took it as that and, you know, not let it distract me too much. You know, it's not personal. Sometimes it can be, but even if it is, you just move on. You just play the game.
Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, are they ushering in a whole new era in basketball? I mean, everybody's talking about Giannis and all that, but when you look at Curry and Klay and what they're able to do, it just seems like outer space basketball to me. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they've already ushered in a new they've already ushered in a new generation. I think Trae Young is pretty much like the first Steph Curry-like ball player that we've seen, you know, and that happens, right? Like Steph Curry's three-pointer is like Jordan's fadeaway, you know, like all the kids want to do it. Everybody wants to do it. It changed the game, you know, it took the game and cracked the shell. And yeah, I think we're going to definitely start seeing more players attempt to be that. But at the same time, they need to look at all the other things Steph is doing and just not shoot threes. Like, you know, they should probably listen to what he says, because I'm sure it's a bunch of content out there of him explaining how to eventually work your way up to shooting it from the parking lot, you know. But you just have to, you know, continue to work and all that stuff.
I want a little bit of insight of what it's like to feel in, some people call it flow. I've heard it described as being in the flow. I've heard it described as jazz, when everybody is clicking and open to the movement. I've ever heard Steve Kerr kind of talk about that as well. Like when it's working and you step out of the way. How do you describe that in some of those moments when you think about, when you think about when you're not thinking and you're just in the groove?
You know, you have to work to get to that space. You know, you have to think quite a bit to get to the point of not thinking, right? Through repetition, you know, and as basketball players, that's like kind of like the part of the job, definitely, that I don't miss. It's necessary, but I don't miss running over another play and then doing it again and again and again and again and again and again. The morning, afternoon, night, oh my God, you know, but the more you do it, the more it becomes a part of you. So you're able to not think. If we're running thumbs up, I don't have to think about it. I get my spot and I move. You know, the game now has kind of moved to this part where it's like, all right, we weren't a one thumbs up. That's our play, but you got to know every position on the court. You know, but this, you know, having a basic concept of movement is always great in basketball. Being able to play, read, and react. One of the things that I love playing with the Heat was that, you know, the amount of film that we watch together, you know, talking through these things. It's like, okay, you know, when you look at me, are you going to zig or zag? I'm going to zag. Okay, cool. You have these conversations. You have these dinners. You hang out, you know, you hang out off the court as well. You build up that team, that trust. And that's more important than anything, because you're going to need those nonverbal communication skills when 20,000 people want you to, you know, lose. You know what I mean?
I was actually amazed. A few months back, I went to a Nets game. They were playing the Heat of all teams. And I joke, but I don't usually get very good seats, but I had good seats for this one where I was up close and you could really feel the game. And I was watching Duncan Robinson, who's lights out from three. And I think what I was struck by, it's just so freaking fast. The catch and release and all of the plays, but I was specifically watching him, former Michigan man, and it was hitting me at this time. It was like, he's making shots because he made them years ago in the driveway, and it's moving faster than you can articulate. And so that it felt like such such movement that was already in the body that was already worked on. It's the tape, it's for the sure. practice. Because I was like, oh, the speed, it was just so much faster than I could even contemplate. There was no moment for doubt. There was no moment to think about how to make that happen. It was like, oh, nope. this play happened all 6 years ago. Yeah. Like, did it feel like that? I was like, oh, you're like, yeah. you're practicing for a play that you're going to make 6 years later that you won't have time to think about. But thank God you put that time in back in the day.
Well, I mean, it's all a part of the game, you know, it's all in the part of the things that we do every day. And if you want to be a successful basketball player, practicing, practicing that catch and shoot. So in Duncan Robinson's, he's working at this one point, Little League or something like that. He's like, okay, man, I like to shoot it. High school, the levels keep going. Then you get to the pros, it gets faster. Not only does it get faster, the guys get taller and they know you can shoot. Matter of fact, even worse, you're on the scouting report, you know what I mean? And they want to stop you to make sure you cannot affect the game. Those are the challenges. And so you find yourself being like, all right, on top of, you know, all of these Legos that I've built, that's my game. I need to shoot it a little quicker. You know what I mean? And speed. Now we're talking about speed of release as being a thing, reading and reacting to the defense, because they're going to do something there. It's different every single time. You know, even if you shoot it, the hand will be here, a hand will be here, maybe right here. Maybe you'll be wide open, you know. So just continuing to build on what you do, you know, practice, you know, I hate to say practice makes perfect. You know what I'm saying? That's just one of those things. Practice, the repetition just allows you to flow and be creative as the game is flowing to you, you know.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show.
Chris, I wondered what you think about gambling. You know, where you got the NIL, I know that's not gambling, but you got massive gambling on college sports. Massive gambling. Now we're gambling in golf. Who do we think is likely to win? You know, they're gambling on everything. It used to be like horse racing or maybe boxing or something.
Yeah.
Is this healthy for our country to be so obsessed with gambling? Think about the NFL. I mean,
yeah.
Tell me what you think about that as a man who's got, you're a man of character.
Yeah.
What's your sense of this?
It's definitely a slippery slope. And it is kind of a contradicting message because before, you know, athletes, we can think of a bunch of athletes who get in trouble for gambling. And now, you know, you can, if you got a smartphone and you live in the right state.
Or sports betting, maybe I should say. You know, maybe
yeah,
I should.
Okay, sports betting.
I should
sports
be more betting. There specific we go. About it. I meant
right.
Sports betting is what I really mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, we don't want to ruffle any feathers. It's all the same to me. but yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely, it's something you got to watch, you know. And it is, like I'm saying, it's a contradictory message. Like before, it was like, no, all this anti-things, we don't touch it. But now we've worked our way into a point in society to where, you know, the business of it is really, really catching fire and it's what people want. You do have to watch it. I don't bet. You know, I played my little fantasy football, even, you know, I think I played DraftKings with the group for a while, $100 a game. Didn't like it. I don't like losing money, you know? So it's just one of those things. You have to be responsible. You have to watch it. And I just hope that the leagues do a good job of getting people help. If you're going to have something like sports betting to where someone can, you know, do damage to themselves, there needs to be something that they could latch onto to help in some kind of way. I don't know what that is. Like I say, that's a very slippery slope. And I don't know, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of where it goes. And, you know, I've heard, you know, I've seen the stories of people, you know, losing everything they have because of betting. I wouldn't necessarily touch it myself because I'm competitive, you know, and I have buddies that sports bet and I'll sit there and we'll watch a game. The craziest things have happened when you play that line. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, you're right.
I've been a witness to it. It's insane. You know, so I'm like, yeah, I'm not touching this stuff.
Chris, what advice do you give to young athletes coming up in terms of the business side of sports?
Keep it simple. I'm the type of person, I don't think you have to create a business while you're playing basketball. I think that's a mixed message that people make you think that you have to do, because I tried and failed in many things, many endeavors. Running a business is hard. People that do it full time can't do it. You know what I mean? Like, I think players should just, you folk, your business is your body. Your business is playing basketball. There are other things that you can get into, but you need to have an accredited financial institution backing you, a bank. Do the work and build the relationship with them. That's a job. You know, keeping what I have, maybe making a couple of bucks. That's a job. But no, you know, when you're young, nobody really tells you that. They make you think like, well, you got to have a brand. You got to have a clothing line. You got to have this. And you just end up stretching yourself thin and not even maximizing your potential on the court or on the field. You know, so for me, I would instruct them, this would just be my advice. Your business is you. Make sure you get to practice. Make sure you get back from practice. Make sure you have something good to eat or hire somebody to do these things. But, you know, as far as like finances and things is concerned, educate yourself. You know, it's too much information out there not to be educated, you know, and I've made enough mistakes and went through life just a little bit enough to be like, all right, cool. Let me learn the fundamentals of things for myself. And then I can go from there, because everybody just wants you to spend money. That's the first thing I talk about. Tell people like, yo, they'll take your money. Yeah, it's great. Like, I was in so many positions. As soon as you get drafted, it's like, oh, everybody has a way to make more money. But it's like, why would I want to make, which is great, but I have enough money. Can't even keep up with that money, you know? I can't even keep up with that. Let me learn this first, and then I can grow, as opposed to being consistently overwhelmed because you're overreaching and, you know, trying to make $1 million. If you're blessed enough, if you have $1 million, don't go chasing stuff. It's like kind of like the sports betting. You know what I mean? You don't chase it too much, man. Just be fundamental in your foundation. Know the basics and then grow from there. But work on your game, get in the gym. and getting those office meetings too, you know, those are very important.
How do you put the time in, the intensity, the hard work, but not let those things become a part of you or the definition of you? Because when you first got hurt and you first came out, if your wife hadn't have been there, I don't know what would have happened, because it was hard for you. And so, you know, I can tell you that for me in politics, which is, like I say, 24/7, I somehow was blessed enough to never let it just define me. And I have other things that I'm doing. But how do you put everything you have into something, but yet not let it trap you, so that when you have to leave it, which we ultimately all have to do, you don't crash your ship on the rocks?
For sure. I encourage people to pick up hobbies. Find that, not that it has to be immediate, but just find something that you love doing. And it could be a multitude of things, but, you know, you do definitely do. And I talk about this in my book as well. You definitely need a break, right, from the mental stresses of trying to be successful in whatever it is that you're doing. But yeah, you as a person, you know, for me, it was, I picked up the guitar and was like, man, I always wanted to learn music. You know, does it make sense? No. I'm a little older. That's kind of a thing that was like, you know, deterring me a little bit. But I said, man, let me not even think about it too much. Let me just sit here with my kids and just strum on the guitar or sit on the porch and just hang out, you know, because it makes me happy. You know, find those things, be open to those experiences, because that's where I think, you know, the life lessons and the life comes from. Because yeah, we can, when our head is down, we can just be so just concentrated on that thing that we miss everything that's going around us. One of my other things was going out to eat food. I used to cook before big games. I would cook dinner the night before because it'd be so stressful. Then I'm like, okay, if I cook, I have to think about cooking because I'll mess up the dinner. I don't want to burn anything. I don't want to mess it up. It keeps me right there in the pocket and keeps me focused. And that, you know, those two things have been things that I have implemented into my life after after the game left me in playing one. So, you know, it's just, you know, I think it's more so getting to know about yourself, you know, getting to know yourself and getting to know your likes and dislikes so that when you do move on, you can say, all right, at least there's a starting point. You don't have to have a business. Like I said before, you don't have to have a thing. You could just be like, yeah, I play the guitar, man, and I cook. Let's go from there.
I'm imagining like family coming in and you have this huge, beautiful spread and they're just like, oh shit, tomorrow's game must be really intense.
Well, it was usually a family thing. It was like a family affair. So my kids were babies at the time, but yeah, they come in, I'm cooking. I have my sous chef with me, would be over there. My wife's coming in. She always loves doing a table. And so, and during the pandemic, this was like our thing, you know? So it's something that we grew into because, you know, now we're to the point like the kids, they'll do the flowers and they're really good. We'll buy a bunch of flowers. They'll put flowers in a vase. We'll set the table, barbecue, you know, I'll be on the grill doing the thing. And, you know, that's kind of one of the things that it really, you know, I feel that it evolved into. But, you know, cooking during the season, it helped me kind of take the stress out. But then afterwards, it gives me something to kind of fall back on and use in my day-to-day life.
Two players, Chris, that I wish you'd comment on. Kobe Bryant. I mean, that whole thing is just unbelievable. But Kevin Garnett.
Yeah. You know, there's a saying, it was definitely starting, I got it through hip-hop, but it's like, you know, when your idols become your rivals, you know, and that was pretty much the quintessential situation. I looked up to him so much in high school. I wanted to be just like him. I
would Kevin Garnett.
Oh, yeah, Kevin. Yeah. You know, I would rip out posters and put them on my wall and emulate his game. Like, he was the first guy I was like, okay, I see things. I saw the future, you know, and I, you know, had a bit of early success. I had a couple of good games against him. And I think that's when it clicked for him and said, okay, this kid is pretty good. I can't, you know, and like, it was so funny. Sam Mitchell, he was my coach in Toronto with the Raptors. He coached, well, he didn't coach him. He was his older veteran player with the Minnesota Timberwolves, you know? So I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so close to Kevin Garnett. This is amazing. And then I eventually, by the time I got to Miami, it was all, you know, it was all business. Having early success against him, I think I was like 20 years old, had a couple of great plays down the stretch, 20 and 10, we win the game. And ever since that day, it was pretty much a bar fight every game, you know, with Kevin. Like, I never played against somebody to where it was so intense and so physical for the whole entire game.
Was he shit talking you the whole time?
He for the first few years, and then he baited me, and then he baited me one time. Well, a couple times, but he baited me one time and I took it, and then he ended up destroying me. And I said, I couldn't sleep for weeks, bro. I said, you know what, never again. I'm never doing this again. No more talking. And so eventually he's going to talk. That's his game. You can tell he's going to talk, but you know, I had to concentrate on other things, man. He's up here. We're holding each other and grabbing and pulling and wrestling. We ain't even talking about dribbling. Hey coach, you're not even talking about dribbling and shooting. Yeah. You know what I mean? Dribbling, passing. This is all wrestling, you know? But he was just a great competitor, and He was one of those guys that kept you up at night. I knew that I had to be working on my game because eventually I was going to see him. And we clashed, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals, clashed in the playoffs, you know, in the pursuit of championships with our team. So it was just, you know, great to be able to go up against a great player like that.
How about Kobe?
You know, Kobe's everything, man. He was everything before. He was the GOAT before, you know. It was so tragic, you know, of course, him and G passing, you know, and the rest of the families that were on the helicopter, you know, rest their souls, you know. It was tough, man, just taking in that information. But I won't harp on that. Kobe was a great individual. You know, he, the Mamba mentality, you know, that's the thing. He inspired, you know, our generation. And just like KG, I got to got the chance to compete against him. I got to win a gold medal with him. And just, you know, he was just a fountain of knowledge, you know, just the things that he talked about. Like, before he passed, we had dinner in September, a few weeks before the incident. And we were just talking about film and writing, you know, and storytelling. And he was breaking down all these things to me. He's just a wealth of information. And, you know, we definitely lost one of the masters that I felt he was going to master life, you know, and you know, unfortunately, we won't get to talk to him, but he left so much content. He left so many stories to tell that, you know, we can all dissect them and go back through them and really understand. I don't think everybody understood. Like, he was the boy wonder, you know, he's the first boy wonder that grew into the man. And this was, you know, this is like if Bron won championships in his first couple of years, you know what I mean? Like, he won championships.
This has lit you up here. Your feelings for Kobe, it's so palpable. Excitement and it's really interesting to listen to you.
Yeah, no, really he's the greatest. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, Kobe, he was so masterful in what he did on and off the court. You know, I hope you know, those legacies and those stories continue to move on, man.
What does that mean now? You're in the Hall of Fame amidst these names, these icons, and you now stand shoulder to shoulder. What names still make you gasp to know that to see right up there with yours?
Right off the bat, so funny, fun fact, I went into the Hall of Fame with Bill Russell. Okay.
Wow.
As he went in as a coach. So he was there, and it was this moment. Speaking of KG was there, was me, Paul Pierce, KG, and Bill Russell, and Chris Webber. And I'm just like, this is unbelievable. And we're talking to Bill Russell about the Pope writing them letters at this University of San Francisco to support them, and like amazing stories, you know. And it's crazy. I mean, I'm still really trying to process all that stuff. A lot of people try to get me to describe it, but I'm still kind of, it's hard when it's you. I guess I don't have that much of an ego. I guess I'm not sure all the way yet. I used to. But like, yeah, I'm still trying to figure those things out. I mean, you know, it's only so many people that have gotten that honor. And so for me, I'm trying to make sure I pay it forward well. I want to represent the Hall of Fame, represent the game, represent my family well. But it all came so fast and not how I thought it was going to go, not how I designed it in my head. You know, it just happened. So I'm still catching up. But it's been a great experience kind of, you know, just dissecting the things, going back through them and just, you know, going through those moments and see, you know, what stands the test of time.
You know, I think the NBA has gone through different periods of fan appreciation, or I shouldn't say that. It was popular, then it wasn't popular. Now it seems to be popular again. Talk a little bit about the poetry of the NBA, the poetry of basketball. Isn't that what it really is? These giant giraffes that can dance and shoot, and it's just it's poetic in a way.
Poetry in motion, man. You know, I had a coach in Miami. He would always be like, "Yo, you should watch Baryshnikov in ballet, man. Like, I'm telling you, man, you remind me of Baryshnikov." And, you know, that was always such a funny thing. But, like, yeah, that's where I guess, you know, just using these concepts, using it is an art form. You know, it is art. It's poetry in motion. It's art in motion. And, you know, the best part about it is no game is the same. You know, just like a band playing a live show. Tuesday night in Philly is going to be different from Wednesday in New York. You know, that's just how it is. It's things passing by. But just the best part that I like about this game is that you can see the evolution. You can see at a professional level how it's changed. But the true core of the game is with your friends. Like, I've watched my little kids, you know, they just want to get it up to the hoop. You know what I mean? No form, no nothing. Yeah, they're trying to figure out the game.
No net. No net there. Yeah.
That's the true essence of the game. Just getting a two-on-two game in on a Saturday with your friends and just being active and having fun. And so that's the part of the game that I'm connecting with now. But at that level, yeah, it's just it's amazing talent, coordination, intelligence, and just true competition. I love competition. I love seeing people at their best. The young ladies, I don't know if you guys caught that Louisville-UConn game. Incredible game. You know, so the game is growing. And, you know, the ladies have always been there. They're playing some good basketball. And that's what it's about, right? It's about all these things that bring people together. Because, you know, I mean, sorry, Governor, you know, but you know how it is. When you're doing your polling or something, you want to go somewhere and speak. It, you know, it's not that welcoming sometimes. You know, the crowd might look the same. You know, basketball game, everybody comes. You know, everybody's together rooting for their team and, you know, being together. And that's what it's about.
I agree.
Well, Chris Bosh's memoir, Letters to a Young Athlete, is now available wherever you get your books. Hall of Famer, in more ways than one, Chris Bosh. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. You know, I keep up with everything. You know, I always watch, you know, The Daily Show. You know, Governor, I've, you know, watched The Run, of course, like everybody. Boy, I don't know how you guys do it, man. That's I wouldn't do it. Woo, it's a lot.
Well, I also hope you don't do it, because there's a decent chance you'd be successful at it and put us out of jobs. So, so thank you.
For sure. Thank you guys, man. I really appreciate the time.
Hey, everybody. Jordan here, your favorite host of the Kasich Klepper podcast. Thank you for listening this far. If you like what you hear, click like or thumbs up or whatever icon signifies a positive reaction. We love your ratings. We love your thoughts. Reach out to us on social media. Let us know what you want us to talk about, because I'm tired of answering the governor's questions and I just prefer to answer yours. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Kasich and Klepper is a production of Treefort Media, hosted and executive produced by John Kasich and Jordan Klepper. Treefort Media's executive producers are Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, and Matthew Kugler. Line producer is Oscar Guido. Audio direction by Tom Monahan, head of audio for Treefort, with production and editing by Maxwell Carney. Talent booking by Blythe Asher, with additional production help from Tim Schauer, Haley Mandelberg, Colin Motel, and Anastasia Ibrahim. This podcast is powered by Acast.